Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Don Allen in Studio A. On this cold, chilly, rainy evening, over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing this tonight?
Well, you know, Don, I can't say too great from the left, if you will. But of course, you from the right. I know you've been doing a lot of celebrating during the day. Republicans have taken control of the House here in Minnesota, but more importantly, they have taken control of the entire legislature, the Senate and the House in Washington, D.C. This does not bode well for the future of President Barack Obama in more ways than one, including a plan for impeachment, a plan to move towards impeachment as soon as the new Congress convenes around the 18th, 19th of January. In fact, I was going to ask you to play the song of the South, if you will, Zippity-doo-dah, Zippity-day. My slaves are working day by day, you know, because, man, this is, you know, I'm looking at Cruz and Rubio and McConnell and et cetera, and I'm hearing a lot of interesting things from my brother. So, you know, I know you're feeling good, man. I know that you, that you guys on the right. When do you think you're going to move with the impeachment?
You know, if the Republicans, Mr. Edwards, you know, I'm a new Republican, so I have to, like, put everything in context first. But if the Republicans focus on trying to impeach President Obama in the next 2 years or his last 2 years, 18 months or whatever he has, I think that's absolutely ridiculous. And the people that voted them in will not get all their promises, but nor do they ever get their promises. So I think that's something that a contingent of the Republican Party is going to shoot, or the elected officials are going to shoot right at. But, I mean, here in our Shangri-La, as you put it so eloquently, we have our own issues with the Republicans and the Democrats, for that matter. And so as far as focus goes, it's undefined exactly when they're going to go after him. But you can guarantee, Mr. Edwards, as you already know, they're going to go after him. They're going to go after Hillary. They're going to go after a lot of folks. And Hillary is not even in office yet. So.
Absolutely correct. But like I said, and phone lines are open, by the way, after we get through with a analysis on a big hearing. Our phone lines are always open. I know you had an inquiry just minutes ago about what was this program about, kind of thing. Geez, we've been doing this for 3 years. But anyways, certainly for our domestic and international audiences, we're talking about election results 2014, last Tuesday night here in the United States. The Republicans returning to power in the Congress of the United States, as they did in 2010, if you will. Mr. Allen and I were discussing, I from the left, he from the right, if you will, just what the ultimate plan will be for the continued shredding of the legacy of President Barack Obama. Senator, the new leader, I don't think there'll be a battle within the Republican caucus in the Senate. So Mitch McConnell, winning another 6-year term out of Kentucky. Mr. Allen, let me ask you this question before we get into the testimony in a very powerful hearing here in Minnesota in an attempt to, really remove the only two African-American senators that we have in the Minnesota Senate. But do you think we're looking at a possibility here in Minnesota of another government shutdown?
I think that could be a possibility. It depends on a few things. It depends on how Republicans in St. Paul handle themselves. when they get elected, and some of the policies that Governor Dayton will be pushing. Now, I know a lot of people, Mr. Edwards, to just be really frank with you on the right over here, was upset that Governor Dayton walked back in. But literally walked back in. But what was funny was the information that, you know, we were getting off the internet on social media. Jeff Johnson, who was Governor Dayton's challenger, wrote, real quick here, I want to thank each and every one of you for all the hard work that you did to make this race competitive. Most people thought Mark Dayton was a shoo-in for re-election, and we proved them wrong. And I'm like, got this big question mark planted on my forehead, like, what the hell is he talking about? I mean,
man, you took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah. From the left. I, you know, at no point in time until just now, until you read that quote-unquote declaration by Jeff Johnson, was there ever any indication that the Republicans were extremely confident that Governor Dayton was extremely vulnerable. I mean, I'm shocked to hear that kind of statement.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, Mr. Edwards, is that the senatorial candidate running against Al Franken and Jeff Johnson not once came into the African-American community. I'm not talking about the Somali community. That is not the African-American or the black community. I'm talking
right.
about North Minneapolis. They're on Glenwood and Morgan, or up there on Lowry and Penn at the African-American-owned, black American-owned restaurants. And one of the reasons, Mr. Edwards, that just real quick here, I need to touch on this because I hope they're listening tonight, is the chairman of the Republican Party of Minnesota, Keith Downey, and his token, Mr. Chris Fields, who is the secretary, are so full of political arrogance.
His token Negro?
Yes, basically. And
okay.
They're so arrogant that they figured that, you know, this Johnson was just going to walk in. And it really bothered me because, you know, I have this ongoing bet with a couple of people, Mr. Edwards, that I call all the races, all the major races.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter who I write about or who I say I support. There's always going to be a winner. Okay. And I'm at 100% still. I called all the races that I wanted to call. I'm at 100%. I called Jeff Johnson. I called, what's his name? The only thing that I thought, I knew Al Franken was going to win, but I was a little worried in the beginning because I called him to win. And then Stuart Mills. I really wanted Stuart Mills to win, but I didn't call Stuart Mills. And I just kind of watched it for a long time, but I had my fingers crossed. But the Republican Party of Minnesota, it has to go back. Either they need to file bankruptcy and start over again, or they just need to reject these couple of figureheads, placeholders, and start new. Bon Clayton is an older gentleman. He's been a part of the Republican Party of Minnesota for more than 40 years. He ran when I ran for chairman of the Republican Party of Minnesota. And his statement today publicly was that Chris Fields and Keith Downey must resign. Period.
Okay. Even though the Republican Party took back control of the House, if you will, I see. But you feel that those two titulate heads didn't do enough based on the momentum around the country?
No, they did not. There was momentum around the country. And, you know, Mr. Edwards, the Republican National Committee got a huge grant, like $10 million. Well, it could be a huge. And it was specifically to be used for states like Minnesota that have minority populations that have not been in touch with the Republican Party, that, you know, you can go out and do voter education. These guys didn't even attempt to apply for it, number one. Number two, they were singing to the choir. Now, I'm happy that, like, the state, the House reps, they, you know, there's a Republican majority now. That's great, but they're still battling against the DFL incumbent, well, now reelected governor of the state, Mark Dayton. And so they were so confident that they were just going to sweep all across the board. But not once did they bring these guys into the community. And they felt,
okay.
I went to a fundraiser in White Bear for Jeff Johnson. And I got a video on YouTube right now looking for a black person at Jeff Johnson fundraiser. It's pretty hilarious. And there was two Somali brothers out there and me. So there's three dark people there. And no one in that room was under 50. Nobody in that room was under 50. You cannot win a gubernatorial race with a room full of people over 50 years old. It wasn't working. It's not going to happen for them.
But let me ask you this question, though, Don. I mean, from the left here to you on the right. It seemed that the Democrats, though, my good associates on the left, were extremely comfortable in kind of not only bashing, but holding at arm's length as if he had a sour smell about him, President Barack Obama. And I'm puzzled because now they're having a hard time indicating that he could have made a difference. I think he would have made a difference in Kentucky, as an example, where the African-American vote in Louisville and Lexington decided to stay home. I don't think they liked the way that the Democratic challenger, Ms. Grimes, so disrespected the president, refused to answer the question about did she vote for him, if you will. I saw some other folks who had no problems. We had a gentleman over in South Dakota, person, who indicated he voted for, and he was a former Republican, turned independent, running for Senate over there in South Dakota. He lost, but the man was a man of principle, and in that race in South Dakota indicated, yes, he voted both in 08 and 2012 for the black guy, for President Barack Obama. And the lines, their phone lines are starting to be open. What do you think we as black Americans should say to the Democratic Party, who was so dependent upon the charisma of Barack Obama in 08 and 2012 to help carry them and continue them in power, and they so quickly turned on him and made it appear that he was some kind of cancer, or maybe even Ebola, and told him they did not want him coming into their states and et cetera. Should they expect that we as black Americans, black Democrats, will be towing the line in 2016?
Well, I think that people have to understand, Mr. Edwards, that the Democratic and the Republican Party are led by a white patriarchal system or construct where we as black Americans are not in charge of anything. We have our vote, but our vote is mishandled. Looking at the Twin Cities, let's just look at Hennepin County. Out of 71,013 registered voters, only 441,000 came out to vote. Okay, that 250,000 could have made a difference for someone like the Republicans, for example, for governor or candidate Johnson.
That was Jeff Johnson,
Johnson, or one of the independent, Hannah Nicollet, or one of those folks. And so you have a large quarter million people in just Hennepin County alone that did not think the midterm elections were important enough to come out and vote. And I assure you, Mr. Edwards, the Democratic Party and the white patriarchal construct, white male patriarchal construct, is in full control, number one. Number two, the Democratic Party, especially in Minnesota, has rejected all African-American women. As you know, as we talked about in the production meeting, Mr. Edwards, there was several Joy Marsh Stevens in Brooklyn Park, Reva Chambliss in Brooklyn Park, in St. Paul, Lena Bugs ran, and of course she didn't beat the incumbent over there, but none of them won. They even come close to winning. I mean, they ran a good race, had a good ground game, but where were the Democratic folks that had, and Sharon Sun, the big one, Sharon Sun actually could have won with her.
Was the third congressional district, which is the western suburbs of Minneapolis, yes. In fact, by the way, we had her as a guest on our program 5 months ago.
Yep, and we kind of got her role going with the media, actually. And so when you look at this whole, this Democratic thing, you know, that's why they sent Michelle Obama in here. that's why they, you know, she came through and toured. She didn't, and then President Obama, did he come like the next week or something like that? At all this?
Yeah,
this,
yeah, he's been there a couple times. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so.
In other words, Al Franken did not tell him, nor did Mark Dayton, but particularly Al Franken, because Franken running for the Senate, and Franken won by over 200,000 votes. Did not say to President Barack Obama, "I don't think you should come here, buddy. You provide a stigma." And I was just really disappointed as a historian, if you will, and an observer at court on how many white Democratic, both incumbents and challengers, were quick to talk in terms that that President Barack Obama is so disliked. I noticed they kept running what they maintain is a two Pacific polls, one with respect to his effectiveness and one in respect to how he was liked. A friend of mine from the West Coast said to me last night in a reflection and overview of what was happening that he finds it very disturbing. This is a Caucasian, by the way, that the terminology that's being used on all the networks and the cables and et cetera, in which references are now being made about President Obama as if he's an idiot, that he's not competent. I mean, my God, man, you know, in order to be president of the United States, the one thing you definitely got to be is competent. I mean, he showed that on two occasions based on the statistical data, you know, over 100 million Americans who voted in two elections, that he certainly was that. And it's like all of a sudden he is being totally and absolutely held responsible for the gridlock that has become the cornerstone of Washington, D.C., and the last time I looked, I didn't see any more than 43 or 44 African Americans in the House, two in the Senate, one Republican, one Democrat. I guess that's the way the best of all worlds was supposed to be. But I got to tell you, and I'm going to talk about that on this program over the next number of weeks, is that what is it that we, you know, allegedly owe the Democratic Party? You know, you could speak, Mr. Allen, on certainly both aspects from, you know, but from the left, I'm going to raise the question because I thought the president was treated very poorly, if you will. I thought it was really chicken, if you know what I mean. And I think it's a signal, and it's the reason I opened the broke tonight's program by saying, at what point do you think the Republicans will make the move to at least test the waters? And for those that are listening and maybe don't understand Civic 101, contrary to what the leadership of the House is saying, mm-hmm. there's nothing they can do. If 25 or 30 Tea Partiers get together and decide to put together articles of impeachment, the matter mm-hmm. will have to be brought to the fore under the rules of the legislature of the Congress, in this case the House of Representatives. And God help us if they receive enough momentum that the articles of impeachment are then sent to the Senate. The Senate is quote unquote the jury, if you will. The House are the prosecutors mm-hmm. of the president and et cetera. And I just think, Mr. Allen, that the Tea Party crazies are feeling real cocky with some undercurrent, you know, Asian provocateurs in the Senate like Rubio and Cruz, Alexander of Tennessee and people like that who are prepared to let's have some fun, let's test the waters, let's be about the business of payback. To the whole misery that we in white America have had to suffer through with regards to this black man sitting in, quote-unquote, the White House for these 6 years, and he's still going to be there for two more years. That's the kind of thinking and talking that Mr. Allen is going on. Now, you're much more into the cyber world, if you will. You know this, that when you're talking in terms of many of the websites and et cetera of the conservative right, I mean, they're saying, hey, man, this is the time if we can conduct a political, I hate to say it like this, Don, if we can conduct a political lynching, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what some of the right-wing zealots are actually aiming at. I mean, that's the thing they want. Let's go after this guy and try to discredit him and get him out of office as quick as possible. And I don't understand some of their their methodology, but just looking at it, it's very hateful. It's very hateful.
Oh, very hateful, very hateful. Which then, given the undercurrent and the tone of violence in this country, and I've said it on this program and other programs I'm affiliated with, it sets a very dangerous trend, a very dangerous pattern, and God help us if it becomes a pattern in practice, the practice being to do harm to this president, if you will. But I'm telling you, contrary to what Mitch McConnell said this morning about reaching across the aisle and all that other rhetoric, particularly in the House, I mean, there are individuals who, as far as they're concerned, it's now time to show who's the boss, if you will, in the tradition of the plantation, and to just destroy the legacy and the presidency of Barack Obama. So, you know, but, you know, what I'd like to do, because we have already, you have there in Studio A, what is the early edition of tomorrow morning's Minneapolis Star Tribune, and you were sharing with me in the final production meeting just about a half hour ago some reflections in the Minneapolis Star Tribune that are not consistent, Mr. Allen, with what took place over there this afternoon, and we, you know, we'll certainly open the phone lines after we get through with our narrative and et cetera. But do you want to move into that now?
Sure, yeah. I was just looking at the Star Tribune. They have an article that will be probably in tomorrow's paper that was posted at 8:42 p.m. It looks like it was updated at 8:42 p.m. It says, "Uncertain Path Forward for Hayden and Champion's Ethic Complaints" by Andrea Matos, reporter for Star Tribune. And the Senate Republicans filed a complaint in October claiming that Hayden threatened Minneapolis School District if it did not award $375,000 to a community organization that aimed at closing achievement gap that has ties to Hayden's father. They also alleged that Hayden misused federal money as a board member of Community Action of Minneapolis. Of course, Hayden did not testify. At the request of GOP senators, the school district submitted testimony from three officials, school officials, including Superintendent Bernadette Johnson. Johnson said that Hayden and Champion were strong advocates, in parentheses, of quotes, I should say, for Community Standards Initiative. CSI eventually received the grant money, but then canceled the contract after its leaders admitting they were not able to meet the requirements for the money. So that's basically the thesis of what they're talking about.
And this is the Minneapolis Star Tribune posting now for home delivery early tomorrow morning. Here's what I'm bothered by, Mr. Allen. I was, of course, for purposes of transparency and absolute clarification, I was not there, as you were not there, but then a whole lot of people weren't there. Very, you know, small group per se. But first of all, I'm very troubled by the testimony. I had at least three individuals there who recorded the hearing. First of all, the hearing lasted from approximately 12:15 until 4:30, or a little bit after 4:30 this afternoon. Senator Hayden basically was on the stand, if you will, for a majority of that. Senator Champion came in and gave basically about a 45-minute, well-crafted response, primarily in writing. Both senators raised a rather interesting question this afternoon, Mr. Allen, and that was that all and everything that the Star Tribune had quoted as the school district being the source was hearsay. And lo and behold, in the course of the meeting this afternoon, Senator Hahn, our good friend Senator Hahn from Eden Prairie, announced the following, that on October 29th, just a couple of days after that Senator Hayden was brought in to testify, to give testimony in the articles of unethical conduct against him. This is kind of puzzling, Mr. Allen, is that Senator Hahn sent a letter dated October 29th to the district indicating it was now time for them to attest, using some legal references and legal language now, it was time for them to attest to the statements that they had given to the Minneapolis Star Tribune starting back in September, that there had been intimidation and threats, that the district was to accept state money for a program called CSI. They were to award that without bids and et cetera, that threats were made and et cetera. Now, we said on this program a couple weeks ago, we found it puzzling that there were never any direct quotes attributed to Superintendent Bernadier Johnson. We talked about Public Information Officer Stan Allen, no relationship, and spelled differently than my co-host here, seemed to be the mouthpiece. There was allegedly some Q&A that allegedly showed up where some questions were asked allegedly by the Star Tribune, and the district then responded. Senator Hahn basically maintained that they did the same thing in the letter of 29 October, and I maybe missed it. I did not see any reference in any posting by the Star Tribune today that the letter of October 29th was sent by Senator Hahn, and that Senator Hahn gave testimony and reflection this afternoon about that letter. And the fact that the letter was actually, Mr. Allen, posted to at least 13 people, maybe even 14, all either board members or personnel of the Minneapolis Board of Education Special School District Number 1. And what they basically did is responded to 9 questions, Mr. Allen. And if I'm not mistaken, I didn't hear that, nor do I see that in my copy of tomorrow morning Star Tribune. Do you see it there? Do you see anything in reference that there were 9 questions posed?
I am looking here through it, and I don't see. We are not investigatory body. I don't have level of comfort. Investigation, Papa said. If we have a little patient, it'll come out. The committee voted to defer action until after the State Department of Commerce and other agencies complete their investigation. Community action, blah blah blah. No, there's actually, you're absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards. There is no mention of a piece of correspondence between this committee, Senator Hahn, the school district, more specifically the superintendent, or any of these contacts that gave testimony, which at this point are undisclosed to the general public.
All right, let me now say this also for our listening audience. There was no representation, as there was with the exception of their lobbyists when they came together 2 weeks ago. There was no representation of the Board of Education at this hearing, and so consequently none of them were sworn. Now, Senator Hahn indicated this afternoon that the legitimacy of their response to his 9 questions was the fact that they had their responses notarized. Now, here's the thing. We're now being told, based on this testimony, not the article in the Star Tribune, which raises serious questions to its ethical conduct, that none of these people had previously indicated that they were present. This is a lot of people. For those kinds of allegations and so-called activities to have taken place, threats, talking in terms that you will take this program, you will give this money to these specific individuals, and et cetera, you know, it's hard for 13 people to keep a secret.
Yeah.
And particularly the board members who are all elected officials. Here's the thing that I'm bothered by, and I would like to see if there's anybody bold enough to give us a call. Why would 9 elected public officials, that's the number of the Board of Education, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would 9 elected officials allow that kind of intimidation, threats, and et cetera to be made and not exercise their obligation as elected public officials to fully disclose what had happened? Can you understand that, Don?
No, I don't understand that at all. I really don't understand that. And because something should have came out. Because I know if you have, I mean, it would have been a bigger lot than it is now, but was even though I'm not trying to not shed any light on the cockroaches, but there's something happened somewhere, and, I mean, we're not privileged to that information, but, yeah, I mean, You should have. They should have came out. They're elected officials. They represent.
They're elected officials. And the reason I say this again for the authenticity and authenticating, if you will, of the testimony that's already been given, when they had the first hearing and only Senator Hayden was called to stand in the well, one of the things after that, and quoted in the paper, the Star Tribune again by the reporter Ms. Maltos, was that the senator made a peculiar statement, and when he made it, I was puzzled by it because we were already hearing rumors. When he said, well, we're going to subpoena people because we know that people are scared of their jobs. Now, was he talking about the majority of the people based on the letter he sent on the 29th of October who were elected public officials, that they were afraid of their jobs that they work? Because I don't understand how a public official could be scared of his position as a quote-unquote member of a elected body. I'm just not understanding that. Also, what is absent from the article of the Star Tribune was the specific reflections made by Senator Hahn in his letter of October 29th with regards to additional expectations of the district to be able to deliver proof that these threats and these meetings took place. And then, as I say before, Star Tribune not reporting it. We're reporting it, though, exclusively here on the Donnie Ronnie program, is that at least nine individuals and the remainder, nine board members and the remainder being employees of the district, all attested to the fact that they were all present when these conversations took place.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Edwards, we do have a couple of callers in the queue here.
Let's get them in. Oh, by the way, the attorney representing Senator Bobby Joe Champion, F. Clayton Tyler, well-known Minneapolis attorney, was in first chair representing Senator Champion, accompanied by an African-American female. We will also delve into some of the individuals that were present, including one of our ecumenical leaders who came in with a beautiful Don Green suit, matching green alligator shoes and green socks.
Wow. I wonder who that was. Here we go.
Yeah, open the phone lines. Let's get it moving.
Again, that number is 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904. Caller, you are live. Do you have a question?
Hey, Donna, you talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Ron, I was there today. You know, I was there last month, and I was there today. And, it
and
was
this
just
is,
another,
oh, yes,
this
yes,
is
this
Lisa
is Lisa. Gotcha. Okay, go right ahead.
It was kind of a fishing expedition again. They sent out 18 letters or 18.
Oh,
it was 18.
Okay. They were reading
18.
So many names off. Gotcha. Okay, 18,
yeah.
Mr. Allen. Think about that.
There were 18, and the three people who responded were the actual three people that needed to respond who are actually part of the process in the beginning, and that was the board chair, Dick Mammon,
mm-hmm.
Superintendent Johnson, and the lobbyists for the school board.
And
so
the lobbyist was at the first meeting that you're talking about that you and others were in attendance at. He sat in the back of the room but never stepped forward, never said anything, was never sworn. Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know him at all. So
oh,
if
I know him.
I saw
we
him,
know him.
I wouldn't know I saw him.
Yeah, we
but
know
he,
him.
But those were the three that responded in addition to having some small response from an email response from the lawyer. But, you know, Bobby Joe said something real interesting. He said, you know, I never threatened anybody, and I never said anything about stopping state aid. He said, as everybody knows in this room, he said, clearly whoever Star Tribune is alleging made this statement is not part of the process, not part of the school board, because anybody would know that I would have to convince 199 other people to support me and stopping state aid.
Absolutely,
And there would never be a time that 199 plus us would ever be on the same page for anything. He said it was never said. He said he wasn't part of any negotiations between the school board and the contract, but he said, but I tell you this, I am going to be involved in anything that I'm trying to have happen in our community, he said, because that's my job.
Okay.
He said, that's my job, to follow it, to help people in the community get to the legislators. He said, it's also my job to do what I can to help in the school district when we have a 43% to 51% graduation rate, where in the white community you have a 80, 81 to whatever amount he said graduation rate.
Okay, but let me just say, let me just cut in on this, Ms. Clemens. Is I'm puzzled. Mr. Allen and myself in our pre-meeting were wondering and going back over some of the things that were testified to this afternoon in a meeting that basically lasted from 12:15 to about 4:30, right? I'm just wondering why the Star Tribune did not give us the blinded reading public some more salient points, even as you're giving us right now, as I'm giving it based on sources that were providing information to me as pertains to the meeting. Why were some of these things, the very profound statements by Senator Champion, why do you think it was not being shared with us in this article that will appear in tomorrow morning's paper? And the headline, as my colleague Mr. Allen just read, that they're as if the two senators are having problems with regards to their integrity and veracity and et cetera. What was your sense? Because you were sitting there watching this very long meeting, which I think you only took two breaks. They only took two breaks of a couple minutes apiece.
Yeah, they took two breaks. I tell you this, Mr. Edwards, clearly she was there to feed the Republicans because that's all they referenced. And Bobby Jones said, Senator Champion said, I think it's funny that you keep quoting what Star Tribune said or bringing articles from Star Tribune, but you didn't bring in the op-ed piece that Senator Hayden and I did. At some point, they even started calling Senator Champion him and your client, or Bobby and your client. That's how they started referring to him at some point. But the reporter, it was two reporters, they're two Star Tribune reporters, and they both sat on the Republican side. They both conferred with the Republicans. On the breaks, they talked to just the Republicans. And then I walked over there at some point, and I took pictures of them talking.
I saw that picture. That is a great picture of them, Montos and the Republicans sitting there against the wall by the door talking. I did see that.
And they, in fact, Don, I went over there.
For the purposes, Ms. Clemens, if you would, let me be clear for the purposes of our international and national audience. You took pictures of the reporter talking exclusively with the Republicans, and Mr. Allen has seen that and is being posted, and hundreds of people certainly are already looking at it. Is that a correct analysis for both of you?
That's an absolute fact. I walked right over there to them, took the picture, and then there was another female there with a yellow sweater on. She started trying to guide them out of the door, said, let's go out here and talk. I said, well, hold on, wait a minute, is this a private conversation? I said, because I'm a taxpayer, too. I said, so is this a private conversation? Can I not be part of it? And Senator Han, or Han, however you say his name, he goes,
Senator Han.
You can stay. You can stay. And I asked him, I said, do you think maybe the other people, first of all, they gave him 2 weeks, Mr. Edwards, and they gave him 2 weeks to make contact with the school board to talk to them and see if he could get further information. They gave him 2 weeks. He didn't send out a request for information for 7 days. And then they responded to him. The three main people responded. Then he started asking, can he have more time, because he wanted to see if he could get responses from the other people. So it was a fishing expedition.
Let me ask you a couple of questions, Ms. Clemens. I'd appreciate you taking the time to call. Was there ever any confirmation that Superintendent Bernadier Johnson, as well as the board chair, as an example, particularly Bernadier, because it was Bernadier back in the summer, as I was hearing the rumors and et cetera, as an investigative reporter, who was talking in terms that the meeting was basically comprised of just three people. There's two state senators and her. And that's when the intimidation took place. In fact, in a conversation she had with a very well-known and well-respected educator, she talked in terms of how fearful and she was and how she broke down in tears as these two big black men threatened her and et cetera. Now, was there any at any point today in this this almost four, well, it was 4 hours actually, in examination, if you will, was there ever any indication that the Superintendent Johnson has offered or is expected to give testimony under oath?
No. No. And I'm surprised that anybody would say that Bernadette Johnson broke down in tears. In fact, if you read her Q&A that she sent back, her responses to Star Tribune, which have been offered, she doesn't say any of that in her questions. In fact, the Star Tribune reporter...
I set that up, Ms. Clemmings, and I have to apologize to you, but it was a trap that I was setting. And the reason is, with regards to a statement that was made in the meeting this afternoon by an attorney, in which the attorney did make the statement, it has been recorded, Mr. Allen, again an exclusive here on this program, in which the attorney said that the superintendent's second statement didn't correspond with her first statement.
No, I didn't hear him say that. When he read her statement today, in fact, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, went back and reread her statement into the record. And what she said was that they were tenacious about asking to see what was going on with the CSI deal when they were first talking about it. But the idea to bring it into the school for discussion came from the lobbyists. That never came from Jeff and them. Remember, they were over there fighting for funds for the CSI program. And then the lobbyist was the one that said they didn't want it done that way because they had already done business with CSI. They wanted it to happen through the school. So that and the lobbyist said that right in his or her response. I don't know if the lobbyist is a male or female, so I don't want to say that.
The lobbyist is a male. He is a male. He was there sitting close to y'all when you were at the meeting last month. He was not there today. Strategically was not there, just in case. Also, I find it interesting that the Star Tribune did not report, Mr. Allen, that the subcommittee does not have subpoena powers. It would take the full Senate and the overall committee, because initially Senator Hahn had made the statement that it would be his intention. He was talking more about the CAP agency, if I'm not mistaken, Ms. Clemmings, when he talked in terms that they were going to ask the auditors of both the Department of Commerce and Health and Human Services to come in and give information about the CAP agency. Now, let me just move over to that.
Now, they were there. They were there, Ms. Edwards.
And they gave testimony?
Absolutely. Both
the auditors
Department
gave testimony?
Human Service, the Department of Human Service and the Department of Commerce, they were both there.
And did they give testimony under oath?
Yes, they were sworn in, and both gave it was, the DHS was a female on a male. I think the
and
male
what
was
did they
the
say
lawyer.
About, what did they say about the New York trip? Because that is the key component
said,
that the Star Tribune has been hammering.
Let me be clear. The DHS was a female speaking, and she had a male lawyer there. When she spoke, she said that from what they had seen, they didn't see anything that rose to the level of criminal, but that would be for someone else to look at. And then when the Department of Commerce came, they said, I'm sorry, and she said they needed to, they were looking for, I can't remember the name of the program, they were trying to get them to look at all the data and separate it from being data privacy information and public information. So they were
Go ahead. Because I have to then ask the question of my colleague, because we're both sitting here looking at each other. Why was that information not in tomorrow morning's edition of the Star Tribune?
I have no idea. Because
I'm not asking you, Ms. Clemmings. I'm just asking a rhetorical question to my colleague. Isn't that interesting that piece of information, because just 2 weeks ago it was just absolute as it pertains to the Star Tribune, that Senator Jeff Hayden had perjured himself.
The lawyer for Senator Hayden brought in the first article that the reporter wrote after the last hearing, and then he had the second one. She had to revise her article after they called to say she misstated facts in her initial article. So her article was actually revised, her last article.
Well, Mr. Edwards, about
go right ahead, Mr.
Yeah, less than a month ago, Ms. Quitman's, less than a month ago, after reading the complaint and then reading the Star and Tribune story several times and actually talking with Ms. Matos, I published a story that they had nothing on Jeff Hayden, basically, except hearsay from the Star and Tribune.
Here's what happened. At first, they had DHS speak, and they made the statement that they didn't see anything in what they've looked at that would be rose to the level of criminal. But again, that would be somebody else's responsibility to look for that. And then they had the Department of Commerce there, and that speaker was a white male, and he said that they were still investigating. Well, now, Han did try to get them to talk about the New York airfare or something. It was something to do with airfare.
$749 of airfare to on the dates of August 19th through the 22nd, to attend a national conference, and at the same time, Star Tribune indicated that they had been told that the senator and his wife had attended a Broadway play called Wicked.
Yeah, well, however that was paid for, it was not in part of any discussion. The only thing that Han brought up was the $749 airfare.
It's $740. We have it on our computer screen.
Right, for this conference or retreat or whatever that was.
Let's be clear, Ms. Clemens. We like to do it this way here, this program. It was a 3-day convention of the CAP agencies of America, and Senator Hayden and his wife, according to how the Star wrote the story, accepted a $749 airplane ticket. I assume it's round trip to New York City. What the Star went on to say and identified a woman who identified herself as the administrative assistant to William Davis, now under suspension without pay, is that in their presence, the senator allegedly indicated that they were solely going to the sole purpose of going to New York was to attend the play. That's why
it's
so
important
that you just
said. Whoever that is, whoever that was wasn't there to testify. At issue was not a play. It was something about the airfare. And if he went there, if that was considered business, then that I don't know where that
was.
I would encourage
all of our listeners, national, international, et cetera, and both yourself and even my colleague, Mr. Allen, go back and take a look at the Star Tribune story the morning following the first testimony by the senator.
Let me tell you exactly what he said, and this may be, Ron, Mr. Edwards, if you give me a second, I think this may be why she had to revise it, because what he really said was that if he went on any of these and he, like, went to eat or his kids were with them and they did
he made sure that he reimbursed.
He paid for it himself.
Right.
He said. So when she told the story, she made it appear that he said he paid for his airfare. He never, ever, that was never even discussed.
Yes.
It was never
understanding
discussed.
Again
so
in
the
article
the
that was printed, whatever revision she made, it was too late because that story is carried in the papers. We have it in our files. She clearly indicated that the woman who was identified in the article as being an administrative assistant to William Davis indicated that she was present when the discussion was we're going to New York because we want to go see a play. I mean,
wow.
And I'm paraphrasing per se, but that's what she did. That's what they wrote, and that had been the topic of much discussion, my friends, over the last 10-12 days that they had him. They had the senator for perjury.
Well, his lawyer said take that away. He argued to take that away. But he did not say anything about I didn't fly anywhere or I paid back my airfare. He didn't. He clarified. In fact, he clarified it at the last hearing that he was. He said, if my kids went, I paid for them. If they ate, I'm not sure if he said if he ate, but if they ate anything while they were out there, he paid for it. So that he did say, but he did clarify that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then she had to amend her story.
Well, see,
well I just can't understand why the specific, some of the highlights that you've just enunciated, which are highlights that have been enunciated to me by individuals who were there and are professional listeners, if you will, why that's not in tomorrow morning's edition of the Star Tribune.
Because it's not provocative. It's not provocative enough. She did not talk to, you know, I watched everything. I learned well. I watched everything. She did not have any conversations with any Democrats. She sits next to the Republicans. They whispered, they laugh, and I went over and just took a picture of them.
Right. Okay. All right. Mr. Elman, you have anything else of our caller?
Well, no, I just like to say, you know, that, you know, looking at this whole kind of fishing expedition, as you call it, Ms. Clemons, it seems pretty interesting that Star Tribune has targeted over the last 3.5 years high-profile African-American men that either run organizations or politicians. And this seems like an ongoing yellow journalism attack because they're not getting the story straight. So, I mean, I guess my last question would be to you, since you're kind of semi-connected, is what's going on going to save CSI?
Well, you know, CSI never went away. It never went away, Don, and you and I both know because you know you've been you know how you are. But they've been around since 2011. They've been working with the school or the parks since 2011. So they're not gone. They're not going to go away. They have no intentions of going away.
Okay. Well, that's all I have. Thanks.
All right. All right. I want to thank you, Ms. Clemons. Appreciate
thank you for your time, sir.
Time to call in and. We'll read the Star Tribune Republican version in tomorrow morning Star Tribune, right?
And yes, and we have another caller.
Let's get the call in. Don, can we go a couple minutes over here in case because we're on to something?
We're going to try here.
All right, go ahead. Get the caller in, though. We need to call in.
Ma'am, you had called us at the beginning of the program, and you're still here on the line. Do you have any comments or anything you'd like to add to the conversation? Hello? Okay, I guess she might have fell asleep.
Oh, okay. They're gone? No, was it a male or a female? I couldn't quite determine.
She's with us at the beginning of the show. And
yes, I remember.
Before we started, and I just wanted to know if she had. Are you there, ma'am? Okay, she's just in the queue. Yeah, she does not want to say anything.
Okay.
So that's fine. That's fine.
All right.
She's in the queue. But,
your observations, Mr. Allen. I mean, what the heck do you think they're going to do?
I think the Star Tribune got a mess they have to clean up, number one. I said number two, this whole thing with education and the African-American or the black student in the Minneapolis public school has to be cleaned up. And that's kind of why I'm glad Don Samuels got elected yesterday. But all together now, we have issues that are taking our focus away from what the real issues should be. And CSI, like Lisa said, or Ms. Clemons said, has been around since 2011, and many forms of CSI has been around even, you know, starting back as far as 2008. And, you know, and those efforts to help out the students, I mean, you can't abandon them, but you have to make sure that there are people in there that are properly certified, qualified, and homogenized to make sure that, you know, the system actually works. It's unfortunate that the fiscal agent of CSI threw the face of CSI under the bus by making a public statement to the Star Tribune that, you know, he now realizes that we did not have, and I'm paraphrasing, the people or the experience to pull this off and complete this contract. And that's one kind of missing link, I call it, Mr. Edwards, out of the whole thing, where no one's talking about that angle and how, you know, certain individuals are thrown under the bus and certain individuals keep moving within their Republican realms.
Let me give you an example of that, Mr. Allen. That is interesting. We have about 4 or 5 minutes unless we want to go a couple minutes over. I was rather fascinated by the crafting of the Star Tribune's report on the problems of the Falwell neighborhood under the leadership of Roberta Englander, who has been a passionate critic of the African-American community, starting with its children and et cetera, and the problems, the debt that they have incurred. They have incurred a debt of almost $378,000, as well as back taxes of $91,000. And there was not the kind of what I call due diligent reporting by the Trib about that. In fact, that whole Falwell thing had been well hidden, if you will. Much of it attributed to at the particular time that this was going on, the problem really started in 2006. And, of course, with the mayor's at that time prime assistant for our liaison with the Negro community, Sherman Patterson, there to kind of protect Falwell, if you will, and the McKinley neighborhood group. I found it fascinating how shallow the story was when you talk in terms of the disappearance of the money and the refusal of Ms. Englander to turn over documentation to the auditors.
Mm.
And I'm fascinated that we haven't been hearing more chatter on cyber as it pertains to that, because it seems to me that this reaches a threshold even beyond the CSI. Expose, if you will. Again, the story a week ago, Roberta Englander, a woman who, quote-unquote, is supposed to be a mover and shaker, if you will. In fact, she just made a statement that Mike Martin should have been made chief of police in Minneapolis. God help us if that would have ever happened. But her organization, $375,000, Steve Brandt, by the way, reporter writing the story for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and $91,000 in taxes that have not been paid.
Wow. Wow. And see,
and yet there's not been a single follow-up.
Yeah, that's no swap follow-up at all whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's money that's just sitting out there. I mean, maybe we can get the state legislative auditor or the Secretary of State or even our good friend Rebecca Otto to look into, you know, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. I just think it has to be. By the way, on congratulations to Sheriff Richard Stanek, who was a guest on our program just about a month and a half ago. His winning a third term as sheriff of Hennepin County. Congratulations to Sheriff Stanek.
Yep, definitely, most definitely, congratulations. Yep. And out here, out in my neck of the woods, I'd like to say congratulations to Grant Nichols. Won a seat on the Columbia Heights School Board. And after some going back and forth, but he did a good job, Mr. Evans. He did a good job.
All right. Rebecca Gaglin, who everybody thought was dead in the water, recapturing her seat on the Minneapolis Board of Education. In fact, some had told me now that your good friend Don Samuels thought that he was going to come in number one in the field and would be the next president of the board. I don't think that that's going to happen. I'm being told by inside sources that the votes are not there for that. So he'll have to come in and do his apprenticeship.
Well, and you know, I will be in Minneapolis to see R.T. Ryback as the superintendent of the Minneapolis Public Schools. So that's what they've been planning for a long time. So, and I would put money on that in Las Vegas today, at least $100.
Jesus, just think about it. The man who wouldn't give black students and black children's parents jobs now is going to make sure that black students and black children don't get educated.
Yeah. And also, there's some problems going on. I've been talking in my barbershop and on the social media. School districts have a huge problem when these little girls is getting beat up on these buses, these city buses, going to school, back and forth to school. And being threatened, and the school district needs to really buckle up and look into that. And I don't know why Superintendent Johnson cut out the buses. I don't know what deal she cut with Metro Transit to even have these kids riding the buses like they do, rather than pick them up, the yellow buses pick them up and ride the city buses. But a lot of the Hispanic, Latino, Somali, and a lot of African-American students are having huge problems. I'm hearing of fights that are never reported to the media.
Mr. Allen, you are absolutely on point, and in fact, you and I did not have a chance to discuss this in the production meeting. At about 3:30 this afternoon, I witnessed, unfortunately, a confrontation on a Metro Transit bus there at Lowry and Penn. Many police cars had to be called, if you will. Large group of African Americans forced to leave the bus. And part of it was just what you said, young ladies fighting, young ladies being beat up, and et cetera. That happened at about 3:30, 3:35 p.m. this evening, or you know, late afternoon in North Minneapolis at the corner of Lowry and Penn Avenue North, right across from the eatery there, the Lowry Cafe. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's what it was about, is that they were fighting on the bus. Young ladies being jumped on and bullied, if you will. I just don't understand it. You know, maybe at some point the superintendent will have as many tears as for these incidents as she said that she spilled when she was threatened by those two big black senators. And a board of education, 9 members elected, duly elected, remain silent, according to them. That's fascinating. Don, let's just take it home, man. The extraction program tonight, you know.
Well, thank you for listening. And we'll have Jay